Afternoon, everybody. We've got three presentations in this time period. They're each of them different times, and I'll be coordinating them a little bit and helping them to get organised. I won't actually introduce them. I think they can use their time to introduce themselves, but I will just tell you how it will be arranged. The first session will be 30 minutes. Some questions during the time, but I'll be keeping track of the time because we don't want the other presenters to miss out on their time today. So 30 minutes. We'll then have a brief 5-minute period where we're swapping laptops, and then we've got a 10-minute presentation and a 15-minute presentation before you go out to lunch. Is that okay? Second presentation is asked if we could have questions towards the end. We'll have a question time. I don't know. Tammy, you're okay? All right. So if you have a question, if you could put your hand up and I'll bring you the mic, because we are recording all the sessions so that people can go back later and listen again later. So we'll make a start with the first one.
Thank you very much. My name's Jenny Kingham. I'm from TAFE Western. I actually hail from Parkes at this point, and in a moment I'll introduce you to Neil, who's one of my team members at Parkes in the Faculty of Business Arts and IT at Parkes TAFE College. Our project came about because we've been delivering IT training online from Certificate 2 through to Diploma level, and specifically in networking now since probably 1995, when the whole TAFE online thing started. And in that time, we've developed quite a range of resources, programs, and various other exciting things that have allowed us to meet the needs of people in rural and remote areas in undertaking IT training where you'd think it wouldn't be possible. We're actually located nearly in the middle of New South Wales. If you draw a cross on the map from corner to corner, you'll actually land on Condobolin, which is 100 kilometres to the west of us. Parkes is known mostly for the radio telescope, which was involved in the moon landing, and more recently for the Elvis Festival that occurs every January. But I haven't brought my wig today. TAFE Western actually covers over 50% of the state, so we have a very wide area of coverage, a fairly small population, but a very large area to cover. We go out as far as Bourke and beyond, Broken Hill, down as far as Cowra in the south, and to Lithgow, just at the base of the Blue Mountains in the east. So within that area, we cover quite a lot of physical area, as well as we cover quite a few program areas for IT. Today, we're specialising in the networking area, and that's what we've come to tell you about, our IT lab online in a virtual environment. Our aims with this project were specifically to improve access and equity for remote, flexible IT students, in specific, to enable them to experience specialist IT practical lab environments without needing to purchase expensive equipment, multiple computers, ranges of software that are often difficult or expensive to come by, and to make it real for them where they are. If you live in Bourke, you're basically 5 hours from where we deliver, 5 hours driving on a road full of goats and kangaroos. It's not a trip that you would do on a weekly or even a monthly basis. So it's important for people that are in remote areas with small populations, particularly now that the broadband rollout is getting out into those areas, that they have opportunities so that it wouldn't matter whether the student was with us in Parkes Lab or whether they were in Bourke or Menindee or Walgett, they would still be able to have the same IT practical experiences. And this is where it's been a real breakthrough, we feel, for the students, because no longer do they need a lot of stuff that's very hard to use and they're by themselves. We can now interact with them and see what they're doing. So the functionality of the equipment became a focus that Neil will talk about. If you've ever downloaded a program and set it up, you'll have an idea of just how easy that can be. And one of the things that this focused on was making that process somewhat easier. And our real objective was just to provide the same level of hands-on experience and availability for both face-to-face and remote students to make it seamless no matter where they were. Neil's going to now come forward and tell you about the project. Neil is our IT teacher and he specialises in networking. He's from the Novell era. He's now Cisco based, as well as Windows. And we're quite comfortable in the Mac environment too, so that being able to go cross-platform is very important for us and also for our students, because they don't always have the standard up-to-date IT equipment that one would perhaps experience more readily down in the Big Smoke. So I'll hand over to Neil for the next part.
Thank you. Right at the start of this, before we get into any great technical detail, I do want to recognise a few people that have greatly assisted during this process. Gail Smith is running a session somewhere else, but she has been absolutely wonderful as part of the Australian Flexible Learning Framework. We've also worked in this program with VMware as our industry partner, and a gentleman by the name of Reed Purvis, who wanted to be here this morning but unfortunately got called away. If you ever get the chance to come in contact or see his name in emails, an exceptionally helpful person. And also within Western Institute, within our faculty, Lindy Wellsmore, who's our faculty director, has assisted us quite a bit, because the framework funding has given us a prompt to get into this area, but as we started to unravel the ball of string, it just got longer and longer, so some of the gap funding has been gratefully received. The idea of the Flexible Learning Lab brings in a range of different technologies, none of them designed for education. Server virtualisation, of which VMware is only one of a couple of different providers. You can go to Hyper-V for Microsoft, or you can go down a whole range, actually, of different server virtualisation technologies. If you don't know what that means, basically it allows you to run multiple individual operating systems on one piece of hardware. As you get further into that, you can do a whole range of really clever things, which lends itself very well to our application. The second technology that was the thing that twigged me when we were doing some searches on the internet is a program called Lab Manager. It's actually designed for software development organisations, and that allows you, with virtualisation, to capture a client's network and do all of your testing of this software product that you're writing for them in a fenced, virtualised environment. Again, that's exactly what we want our diploma Cert 4 level students doing. So that technology we've used. And then the third part of it that we'll talk about is VMware View, which is a remote access technology. So we've tied those three things together to produce this lab. How you access it? The students will access it just through an internet site, portal.lachlanitonline.edu.au. You can access that from any broadband connection. Effectively, it's using an RDP connection, so about 64-65K is your ongoing bandwidth per person that's logging in. This has lots of applications to actually plug it into a face-to-face lab, and there's some incredible advantages in that as well. We also have a whole range of, you can read through the slide, I don't need to read through it. There's security issues, data redundancy issues, all of those are nicely solved by this type of technology. So as far as the student is concerned, because I want to get on and show you the actual lab, the students see a very simple topology. They're at home, they've got their broadband internet connection, they log on to a website, that's it. Students like simple things. The virtual network, so between what the students see and what's physically there is a virtual layer. It's slightly more complicated, took a fair bit of working out, because we were tying together a range of products that weren't necessarily designed to work in the way we were trying to do that. We have a range of management servers that manage the whole system, so it is reasonably complex. None of those machines actually physically exist. Okay, they are services that are virtually provided. So we have a range of vCenter server, lab manager server, domain controller. We have connection servers. We have firewalls in that as well. We have security sacrificial LAMP servers for the internet target. So if anyone wants to hack it, we have a high level of security. We then, off to the right-hand side, have a whole the ability to create any type of topology we want for our networking students, all in isolation. The students can't do any damage. They can't impact upon one another. So that's the virtual side of it. Then the physical topology, this is what's physically existing. We have three ESXi hosts which run the whole system on a piece of hardware. We have a SAN to hold the data, because while we can virtualise machines and get a whole stack of efficiencies there, we end up producing a lot of data. So we're coming up to the terabyte limit just for what we're doing. So how you handle data is a major issue. And, of course, our internet gateway, our router, and our student's PC, but also off to the left there, we actually integrate that with our face-to-face lab as well. So the students that attend the college physically will get exactly the same access as the students that are remote to the college. Okay, and that's a major benefit for us. Just running through these very quickly, VMware View is a product that allows us for remote access. It has a high level of security, plugs into an Active Directory database for the user authentication as well, but is a very, very good and secure system. Every time a student logs on, a virtual PC is made for them. So we're not limited to having a whole stack of physical machines for the number of students we think might log in at any one time. It just virtually makes it when they log in. Lab Manager, I'll show you. It's an incredibly wonderful piece of software. I've done Microsoft stuff, I've done Novell stuff, I've done Cisco stuff. Lab Manager is brilliant. We're very excited by this. Even in a face-to-face environment, if you're not talking about remote access, this in your lab can revolutionise your teaching of practical skills in IT. We also produced an assessment as part of our project, and that assessment is tries to identify some of the features that you can use in this new environment. The assessment is particularly interested in showing you, traditionally in a lab you would get students to start from installing their operating system, and once they install it, then configuring services, The problem comes if they technically termed bugger up one of the steps, they're faced with starting from scratch. If you have a shared environment, how do you get multiple students to access the same machine while ensuring data integrity for this system that students have perhaps spent 2-3 months building up, only to have someone delete it? So the Lab Manager environment allows you to snapshot, actually have machines at various stages of configuration. So if you want to practice a configuring DNS exercise, you just roll it out and they can do it again and again and bugger it up as many times as they want until they get it right. A lot like we were talking about the experiences that students need to be able to muck up in a virtual environment. That's what this does. Okay, challenges for us. I'll get in and show you the environment. It's pretty complex in the back end. The simplicity as far as the student's concerned is absolutely brilliant. The back end of it was reasonably complex to put together, a lot because we were trying to put together technologies that didn't necessarily want to work with one another. So in terms of the extra complexity for our internet security was a major issue that we needed to ensure. Obviously, bandwidth is everything with any online application. So obviously the bandwidth side of things, where your students are located, is potentially an issue. But again, we're using an RDP connection, so the bandwidth is quite moderate once we get going. We're running it off a 3G modem here for you. Benefits. We've proven that you can do it. This was just an idea. VMware tells us that we are the first college to have ever done this anywhere in the world. So I find that hard to believe, but go TAFE. Sorry. Couldn't help that. The benefits of virtualization. At times on those three physical machines, we have up to 70 operating systems running. Does it quite happily. So as a result of that, we've actually been very blessed to be awarded an environmental award for the reduction of physical machines as far as TAFE is concerned, so that's good. All right, so let's just go on from here then, and let me show you what it is. There are two main ways to access the product. One is through the internet. You can just load a browser and you can go to portal.lachlanitonline.edu.au. It will install some ActiveX controls. That browser can be on a Macintosh or a Linux or a Windows system. There is also a VMware View client, which I'll use today, this is what I would, generally speaking, for a diploma student, just issue them. It's about 3 meg, and it does simplify the process. Browsers, if you've ever worked with students and their own home machine configurations, browsers are the biggest nightmare in distance delivery. Trying to get plugins to consistently work on a student that might visit a whole range of sites that aren't educational, and the impact upon their own local machine is very challenging. We find the VMware View client to be particularly stable, whereas a browser depends what else the students use. I've just made a login, so this is a generic login. The information is on our website, so you can go in and have a look at that. The username is just AFLF, for Australian Flexible Learning Framework User. The password is password. I've made a restricted environment. You can go in and have a look and play with it. So we log in. The first step of logging in is actually logging into a... is password, not student. Always helps. The first step is when they log in, they're logging into a Windows XP virtual machine. The idea behind this is that the students should be able to access the same desktop whether they are remote to the organisation or whether they physically come into our lab. That's very important for us. It also gives us the flexibility later on of having a whole range of multiple images there. So students could log in to use a PC that's loaded with the Adobe suite, or people could log in to access a machine that's configured for access to our Cisco gear, which are physical resources. When they log in, it automatically loads up a browser window because now we have a stable environment and I can control what happens on these machines. We also don't have to worry particularly about viruses or anything on these virtual machines because they disappear when the student finishes with them. So they're always created from a template. They're always made new. You know that they're going to work. So when you log on... I can't do two things at once. I'm hopeless. Okay, this is what you see as a student. I'll log in as an administrator so you can see the back end of it. You see three things down the left-hand side. The first screen you've got there is an overview, which is just a summary of statistics. We can disable that, but we have it there for the students to have a look at. You have a workspace. This is Lab Manager. This is the software I'm particularly interested in, and if you're running IT labs, I encourage you to go and have a look at. You have a workspace, which is the equivalent of a blank desk that has power and has a network connection. That's what a workspace is. So it's like going into your lab, but no computer set up, ready, just a space for that student to work on. You have a library, which is a series of pre-built machines that I've built for the purposes of whatever it is I'm trying to teach the students. So when I go and look at the library, you will see that there are three different configurations. They relate to the project that we built. So the first configuration, and I'll just open that so you can see what it is. The first configuration is a server and a Windows XP machine. The first task that they need to do is establish connectivity. This is for a Cert 4 networking type student. Establish connectivity between their Windows XP, their server machine, get all that happening. they can then go and install DNS and do those sorts of things. So this is really, I guess, designed as an assessment as far as the project, but whether you use it as an assessment or whether you use it as part of your teaching doesn't really matter. You can see their IP addresses, you can see the template names, etc. So this is a library of machines that the students can repeatedly check out. They can't change them, and I can create as many images in there as I would like. The ability to do this means that you have the option to pre-configure real-life examples. So, for example, task 3, the second one there, is a Windows XP machine that is infected with 32 viruses. The environment is totally secure and fenced. Okay, so you can have really badly, dangerously configured machines that you know when the students play with them aren't going to infect anything else in the lab. They're things that you can run, if you could get agreement with your ITD staff, on a standard classroom because you're just accessing it through a browser. There is no security risk. Each of these machines, when deployed, are in a totally fenced environment. Students can pick the same IP addresses. It doesn't matter. I can change that, by the way. I can allow internet connectivity into each of those workspaces should we want. If you wanted to do a session on how to run Windows updates for machines, have a machine that's installed but not updated, allow it, well, you can allow it simply out access so it will only get traffic that it initiated. So you can get it to run, downloads or whatever you want to do. So anyway, you have your class there and you say, well, look, today we're going to be working on task 2. So all I do, as a student, and I hate these fingers things, I love USB mice, is clone to a workspace. So it's now going to take a copy of that configuration. I've set it up as a 90-day storage lease, which means at the end of 90 days that deployment will be wiped from the system. I can set it to shorter or unlimited time if I want. I can make a new configuration. So since this is my first machine, I'm just going to give it a name I know about, NJK, Neil James Kingham, config, and we're deploying both of those machines. So what this is doing... Because I've already done that for you because the configuration takes a little bit of time, I pre-deployed them. And I did put a limit. So if you go in there and you get that message, I did limit this user account to just 2 machines. So you can go in there and kill them, and I'll show you how to do that in a moment. In our standard classroom students, I've set a limit of 10 virtual machines for each student because every virtual machine takes resources on a system. All right, just before we go back to the workspaces and see what a deployed system looks like, the other part that you will see as a student would be the media library. The media library is a set of ISO files, so they're CDs of all of the different things we would want students to access via CD. So all of the initial operating system disks, etc. So let's go back to the workspace, and I do apologise about that error. I said to myself I mustn't click on that because it will generate an error because I'd limited this account. When it deploys them, clones them to a workspace, this is what you see. I've called it my workspace previously. The status is undeployed, which means they aren't turned on yet. They've just been copied out of the library. So you've got them from the cupboard, you put them on your workspace. Thank you. And then we would simply deploy them, which is the equivalent of turning them on, plugging them into a network connection. So in a classroom, I can set those up to be individual workspaces that are isolated from every other student and from the internet. I can configure various levels between limited to full internet access. I can also configure all of these workspaces to be visible to every other student. So if it's actually a class that you want to do, then you can have this as a collective exercise where they all connect in to each other machines as you wish. Then you've just got to manage your IP allocation, but that's nothing new. So you will see there we have our Windows Server 2003 machine turning on, ready for login, and then underneath our Windows XP machine turning on and ready to log in. And because they're not connected to the internet, it's telling me it's got a very old virus definition file. So from here, you would use those machines exactly the same way that you would use them as they were physical machines. So do whatever you want to do, whatever your exercise is. Configure IP addresses, get them to ping with one another. Do your firewall stuff, do your DNS stuff. You've got a whole range of viewing options. You can view them as a list like this. You can view them in separate pop-out windows. So if you're working on a multiple monitor system, you can put one there and one there and your lab there. It's great. It really is a good bit of gear. Effectively that's it. I don't need to show you how to do IP type configurations, and we don't have the time to do that. There's a couple of very, very simple things if you work with virtual machines, and you'll know this: Control-Alt-Insert, not Control-Alt-Delete. There's a few little mechanical things on how you're telling the machine, your virtual machine, that the keyboard and mouse input you're giving it goes to the virtual machine as opposed to your host machine. But they're very simple techniques to learn. So, in summary, that's our project. Students can access this facility anywhere in the world. If I log in as an administrator, I see every workspace that's been configured. I can interact with them at the same time the students interact with them. So if a student's logged in and they're saying, hey, I can't do this by phone or email, I can simply log in as an administrator, see their machines and move the mouse around, do whatever we need to do there. So I know time is limited. Are there any questions? Is there anything people would like to know or ask about that?
Neil, is there any limitation to the type of topology you can set up?
No. The only issues that you have is that they have a virtual router. But that really is only if you wanted to configure your students' virtual machines through, say, a NAT interface to go out to the internet. You yourself can't configure the virtual router. You can configure the virtual switches. You can do VLANs, trunks and the whole bit, and that's really good. But if you want to route, you'd really need to go to routing and remote access on a Windows system or set up a little Linux box. Works beautifully with Linux. Doesn't do a Mac emulation. You can access it from a Mac client, but it doesn't actually do a Mac emulation, so you're limited to any Windows product. Windows 7 Server 2008 work fine.
We've got time for one more, two more questions. You're a bit stunned.
It's just one. Yeah, please. There is a cost with Lab Manager. At this point in time, and I'm talking about DEET, and I know nothing else, so for any other RTOs, please forgive me. At the moment, there is some work on a statewide licence for DEET for VMware. I don't know exactly where that's up to, but Reed tells me that is in process. That would be for the virtualisation, the ESXi vSphere 4 that runs on the bare metal machines. Lab Manager was about $2,500, and it's licensed per CPU, not per core, so put it on a quad-core machine with one licence. And you're looking at between 8 to 12 virtual machines per core, but get lots of RAM. I've never run out of processing power, run out of RAM heaps of times.
Okay. We might need to stop there.
Yes, that's fine. Yes. Thank you.
Can we thank the...
I think we're just about ready ahead of time, which is great. And if we could keep questions to the end of this one as well, we'll be stopping for questions about 10 past, and then the next session will start at 15:15.
Oh, hello, everyone. I'm Sandra Mackay, and with me is Matthew Sellers. We're both from O10, which is part of Western Sydney Institute of TAFE. We're from the equity unit at O10, and this project came out of the disability unit, which is within the equity unit. The project's called eAbilities, as you'll see up on the screen. What's up on the screen is the welcome page of our wiki space, and we'll talk about the detail of the project in a minute. But I just wanted to say a little bit about the role of about O10 and the disability unit just as a context for the project. O10 has about 38 to anywhere between 35 and 40,000 students in a year. They're all distance students. They're studying by flexible delivery. It's meant that we've had to engage with e-learning and try to embed e-learning in our practice at O10 in a major way. Obviously, originally it was all print-based, and then we moved to sort of CDs and then a bit of online, but now we're really pushing through, like anyone who's doing flexible delivery. But because we're doing it on such a mass scale, we're really trying to embed e-learning in what we do. In the disability unit, we have about 3,600 or so students with a disability at O10 this year. For various reasons, O10 suits a lot of people with a disability. Certainly people with a physical disability, the distance learning can be useful, but we have people from all disability areas. We have 7 teacher consultants, disability, specific to the different disability areas that people have. But because we're doing it by distance, we have a strong emphasis on adaptive technology. So our teacher consultants do less of the, they don't see the students face-to-face, although we do arrange some face-to-face tutorials, but they do a lot of support in giving the students the adaptive technology they need to participate. So why we wanted to run this project is that our students need to be able to use adaptive technology to engage with the e-learning in their vocational programs. So because so much of our work involves e-learning now, if our students don't know how to use the technology they need to make it accessible due to their disability, then they can't fully participate in their flexible learning program. So what we wanted to do was to create a forum in which those students could talk to each other and us about what they needed to participate fully and also how they use the technologies, because of course a lot of the students with disabilities are very, very expert users of the technologies that are enabling in relation to their particular disability area. So that was our kind of thinking behind the project, and that's why we came up with this eAbilities idea, and the flexible learning framework gave us the opportunity to be able to think about and put it into practice. So I hand over to Matt.
Originally we were looking at a little bit like was discussed this morning with the keynote address. We were originally looking at the project as a kind of repository for resources and tutorials and things like that for students with disabilities to access when they wanted to increase their competency with the particular adaptive and assistive technologies they were using. But when we started looking at the ways that we could deliver this project, when we came across the wiki forum or format, We decided that this was an opportunity to kind of get the students more involved in the use the resource more as a forum than as a repository, so that we could interact, and as Sandra was saying, the students could interact more with each other rather than just have a delivery model, more of an interactive model. And so what the structure we ended up with was from the beginning was, We started with a home page or a sort of main page, and then we chose a number of adaptive technologies, and we created a sub page for each one of those technologies. And I think Sandra's going to outline what those technologies were.
Yeah, the technologies that we chose to use were ones that some of the TCs thought would be useful for their particular groups, the ones that they're using a lot of. The first one that's up there is calendars, and that's actually calendars as in Outlook kind of calendars, and that might seem like a strange one to use. But we were going to use calendars with people with intellectual learning disabilities and people with brain injuries in order to help them schedule organise their study and do their scheduling. And really what it was about was engaging with the technology to do that. So it would help them sort of plan their study, but they would be using technology, because we had to think about people who are high-end users and people who are very low-end users, and calendars was something that we could teach people quite easily to use, and that's why we chose that one. Dragon, naturally speaking, is something that is a voice recognition technology that we use with a lot of our students who are unable to use their hands for whatever reason. We do a lot of work in spinal units, so we've got a lot of students who are quadriplegic, can't use their hands, or perhaps can't move very much at all, but they can use their voice. So it's a way of dictating into the computer what you want and being translated into text. JAWS is a screen reader. It's a bit simplistic to call it a screen reader, but it's a screen reader for people who are blind and vision impaired, and it's, you know, gone a great long way from the early kind of screen readers. So that's what that's for. And the other one was Text Help, which is we mainly use it with our students with learning disabilities. You can be looking at text and have it read out at the same time. It will highlight bits of the text. It's got advanced spell check to help you when you're trying to write. There's predictive word prediction to help people who are having difficulty working just with written text. And it can go the other way, but we mainly use it that way. So we use those technologies all the time, but what's new about this is using it in this wiki to have the students communicate with each other and with us about how they're finding it.
So the structure of the wiki itself is divided up into each page. It's a bit hard to see because of the sizing on this desktop, but well, it just blocks the discussion page out. Underneath here, there's a... I won't bother trying to resize the desktop on this laptop. It'll take me more than the 10 minutes I have. But... Each page has a main page and a discussion page behind it. So the project quickly went from one wiki site to five, and each one of those five subpages was managed by a teacher consultant who was adept at that particular technology. And one of the fascinating things about how the project evolved was almost instantaneously everyone went in different directions. So, for example, because of the requirements of the particular student groups, so if you look at the JAWS page, we've got a lot of text because it's being used by students with vision disability, and some links. And the links that the teacher consultant has put in have been text-based as well, with lots of tables and things that are quite usable for JAWS users. And... another example, sort of at the other end of the spectrum, there's the Dragon Naturally Speaking page, which I hate these mice too, which ended up having lots of video and things like Adobe Connect recorded sessions where students were led.
In this tutorial, I will demonstrate how to create a new profile in Dragon Naturally Speaking version 10. If you are already in Dragon, click...
So what we tried to do was we tried to create resources that were really quick turnaround, and they weren't very polished. They were just simple, and they were intended to be responding to the input from the students. So we tried to get the students involved. We tried to emphasize collaboration from the very word go, and then the students would tell us through that discussion forum what they needed or wanted, or what aspects of the software they were interested in. And then we try to respond very quickly with a very sort of informal video that explained things, or a Connect session that was quite easy to put together, and you could just do it in a couple of hours and post it. And tried to generate that quick feedback process so that they were involved all the way through, and they became collaborators. We all sort of became equally collaborators in the process. But another aspect of it was, because of the variation in student groups and because of the variation in the ways that we were engaging with them, there was quite a range in terms of participation. So some of the students that were involved in the calendars page found the technology very challenging and couldn't quite, you know, found it difficult to make a profile and get up to speed to actually participate in the project itself. Whereas some of the JAWS users or Dragon users were you know, had been using it for a very long time and were very adept at it, and we were looking at very advanced aspects of the software. So I think that's pretty much all we have time for, isn't it, Sam? 5 minutes. Okay. I'll just mention that we can't show. I mean, I'd like to show a discussion page, but I can't get it one. The discussion page is just a simple forum sort of format. One of the things that, I mean, one of the great things about this is that it remains as a. Oh, that was helpful. It remains as a resource that we can use in the future. It's set up as a sort of permanent resource that students can continue to access. And if you have any problems, I can do that while I'm talking at the same time. I didn't know I could multitask so well. It's a breakthrough. So that this resource on, I just had to go to full screen, that's all I had to do. Where's it gone now? Oh, okay. All I need to do is go full screen, though, view full screen. No, still doesn't work. Oh, no. Anyway, the resource remains, and we can continue to add to it. And we, as new students come on, we've added that. This is a place that we can refer people to as they come in. Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah, discussion page. Got it. But it doesn't matter now. So I like to keep my audience riveted. It's the suspense that gets you, isn't it? This isn't a great example, but it's the only one I got. We started off with a bare bones site, and then we invited people to introduce themselves, and we gave them a little bit of a format about what they would like to have the wiki do for them, which aspects of the software they liked, which aspects they didn't like, what they found challenging, and then students could submit. And just sort of submit information about themselves and try and sort of create the very basic form of a networking online community as well. So we hope that'll continue as time goes by. We've got 2 minutes left, Sandra. Well,
yeah, so just if anyone's got any questions, and of course the thing is about, the project gave us the opportunity to focus on this and actually get in and work it through. And I suppose what was interesting was it was quite a long way from what we thought we'd do at the start to how it finished. But now that it's there, we'll be able to keep using it and building on it, so that's been a good thing. So has anybody got any questions they want to ask about it?
Can I slip in a quick one? Did you say we can access some of this?
We're uploading this snapshot of it at the moment. We've had it, so it'll be up there and people will be able to. It's fully functional, so you'll be able to watch the videos and go through the discussion page and so on.
I just want to clarify, so the students couldn't actually edit the wiki page. Their contribution was only through the discussion forum, right?
They could. The wikis, once you've logged on as a user, you can edit whatever you like, so they can contribute any way they wanted to, which has its potential drawbacks.
Yeah.
But we also sort of built in a process of backing it up. We've got a site grabber that we can grab the whole site, and we have an archive of the site. So if there's anything that we really wanted to make sure that they didn't change, we could link it out. So things like this, we just have a link out, and so that can't be changed, but the content on the actual written page can be changed.
Anyone else?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we might finish that session there, and thank you very much. You. I'm definitely going to be having a look.
I'll click OK now.
We're good to go. Good morning. Still? No, good afternoon. I'm Tammy Casey. I'm here from Community Services and Health Industry Training Advisory Body. Short for that will be ITAB from here on. It's a very long name. And I'm a project partner with... There. It didn't go. There it went this time. the New South Wales Dental Assisting Association, which is the RTO partner of this project. We're actually bringing together two industry sectors, oral health and the aged community. And our project actually originated, all because you love to go to the dentist. it actually originated, and the need for this training has come up, and it's been there for a long time, as our population ages and we keep our teeth, because we're all very good about going to the dentist. And what they've been finding in aged care is that it's no longer a case of just going around and collecting everybody's dentures and cleaning them. And whilst the Dental Assisting Association and that professional organization skill up clinical practice, they don't have the resources to actually then be in all the aged facilities as well. So we have a gap in aged care of the aged care workers not knowing exactly how they can maintain that really good oral health that we've enjoyed through our lifetimes. Back in the beginning of the year, I was reading the newspaper and came across this article about the gap in aged care for oral health. And at the same time, the Commonwealth government was recognizing the same project. So there's nothing like good government, you know, attention to get you some funding. And that's where we originated this project. We said, right, the government's now going to be putting money towards skilling all aged care workers in being able to provide good oral health care and education in the aged facilities. They're rolling out this wonderful plan, but there's no resources to back it up. And we light bulbs went on, and we said we maybe could get some flexible learning money for this to develop a resource to help these aged facilities. We got the money, and Barbara Hayes and myself, who are the project partners, we went along to the induction day. And a little bit like the project that we saw first here today, there was lots of bells and whistles, and they had lots of the projects were getting up and telling what they were doing and all this wonderful IT, and were thinking, just totally overwhelmed. But we stayed in there. What we did learn at that day was that this whole flexible learning thing is like getting on a train. And whilst we felt like there was a lot of people in front of us and knew a lot more about IT and e-learning and what products to use, we weren't going to be the last ones on the train either. So that's my little message to any of you that are in this room today, because you're looking at maybe we could get an e-learning project going next year, is get on the train, because there will always be people getting on behind you. One key point to our project was that we built it around what the industry needed. We formed a project management group that was representative of industry. So we had aged care facilities, we had dental assisting experts, and we got them together to say, what is it that the job role, what is it that we're actually training these people to do? I mean, we could have gone out and got some books, and all any of you that have been trainers for a long time had created courses from reading books and cobbling something together. We didn't want to do that. We wanted to make sure that at the end of the day, when this learning occurred, that the workers would actually be able to use the learning, and that's what they needed to do in their job role. So we didn't want to train them to become dental assistants, because that training already exists, and they weren't going to be working in clinical practices. They're going to be aged care workers providing oral health to aged care residents. The other thing that was really critical to the development of our project was looking at the profile of our learners. And this comes back to that little slide about the bells and whistles. The profile of our learners are predominantly female. They're from non-English speaking backgrounds and their mature age. So we had to be very, very cautious about their access and their abilities to use e-learning, and not to disenfranchise them or to give them all the bells and whistles when we're just trying to really give them this learning that they need to provide quality aged care. So on we went. We did have a few trips along the way. We've got a few stumbling blocks. And the first one that we came across was units of competency. We had originally, and I think in the program you'll see a misprint, because we'd actually changed our project halfway through. We thought we were going to use units of competency from the health training package so that our learners could then be assessed and get a statement of attainment in oral health skills. When we put that to our industry reference group, the industry experts, they looked at those units of competencies and said, that's not the job role. That's not what these aged care workers will be doing. So we found straight away that the competencies that currently exist in the training packages, aged care sits in the community services training package, the dental sits in the health training package, that there weren't existing competencies. We decided to plow ahead with the learning anyway, and at this very same time that this was happening, about the middle of the year, the Industry Skills Council announced that they were going to develop units of competency for oral health and aged care. A little bit of a trip, a little bit of a stumbling block, because we wondered, should we wait? Should we wait and do this project and create the learning and the assessment once the competencies are developed? And our industry got back to us and we consulted around that, and they said, no, we need the learning now. They can always go back and do assessment to get units of competency, and that's our future, is to then look how we can align the product to units of competency when they become available. We also felt that we had a lot of information, and like any project that you take, it's like, how do you eat an elephant? We became a little bit overwhelmed, and we had a lot of information to sort through, and it was one bite at a time. And can I say, this was the major part of our project, was getting together the content. It wasn't about the IT bit. It wasn't about the e-learning. It wasn't about making it available online. It was about sort of what Kathy was talking about, those of you who heard the keynote this morning, was making it relevant to the experience that the learners needed. So we did have some stepping stones. Not everything was a disaster. Not that those were disasters, they're just little trips. Our stepping stones were our aged care workers. We really focused on who was going to be using this product. And we had some excellent resources from dental assisting. But when we looked at them, we thought, these workers are not going to be in a clinical setting. They're going to be working with aged people. So we had a little bit of an adjustment to that level of dental health. Another help that we had, another stepping stone, was from the innovations team. I think Neil earlier mentioned the help from Gail Smith. They are constantly there whenever you have a question about where's your project needing, what do we need to do next. Lots of resources. We had a wonderful session with Shane, who took us through understanding toolboxes and what we could, how we could use that. So I can't emphasize that enough. We're never alone. I also put this picture, and I don't know how many people know this famous general, but this is General Peyton from the Second World War. And time was going on. And can I just say, like any project, you could spend forever getting it perfect. So we had to take a little bit of a military approach, which is, a good plan today is better than an excellent plan tomorrow. Because if you wait to get it absolutely excellent, perfect, you will never get a product ready. And it's sort of like that military strategy, you know, you're going to, you'll miss the opportunity unless you get on. So we did that, and we were very encouraged. It was then time to actually take our product or our draft product and pilot it. And that was another really good stepping stone. We had our industry reference group, which gave us guidance on the content. But then we actually had to put it out there in product and say, can these aged care workers actually manage this e-learning? And this is what it looks like. This is just some snapshots rather than trying to show you online and having technical problems. I've just brought up some pages. This is what a student would see. We used a Moodle learning management system. They open up. They come to a welcome page. You can see just there in the middle, there's a place where they get the instructions, what they need to read before they do the learning. There's also a glossary, which will help them. That particularly helps our aged care learners who are coming from non-English speaking backgrounds. The actual site, I just got a, had to, that was me scrolling down. It's divided into sections. And we designed it to have the learning separate from the quizzes. At this point, it's just quizzes, an opportunity for them to do some reflection over on their learning. Eventually, that will be aligned to units of competency so that they can go through, and once they've finished and completed correctly all of the assessment part, they'll be able to get the statements of attainment. At this point, it's just a mechanism for them to check their learning. And they can come in and out of any one of those learning sections. At the moment, the part that's on live, when you go into the site, which the visitors for the framework, is the bit on the mouth. We used Articulate as a software program to make it really easy for our learners. In this case, it's saying what this is about the lips and what should they look like. So a lot of it's written as questions, so that as a learner in an aged facility, I'm thinking, oh, right, that's what normal looks. You know, those are healthy lips. And then there's some elderly lips and some other problems that I haven't included those pictures. Thank you. Someone just said thank you. Yeah, you don't want to see the unhealthy gums here. But that's really important. This is about the experience. This is what they see, but they don't know what they should be, you know, making the judgment about healthy. Here's another page about the healthy gums. Another feature of Articulate was on this screen was the question is, what are some other things that we might see in the mouth? And by clicking on those boxes on the left, we'll bring up actual photos of some of the cancerous lesions, other things that are caused by smoking. They're really not very attractive. But what we're trying to get the aged care worker to do is to recognize it. They only need to recognize it so that they can refer it onto the visiting dentist, or so that the ENs or the RNs in the facility can organize a dental visit for those patients. This is the quiz. We just use the simple Moodle for the quiz. In this one is a little bit of a matching with the different parts of the mouth and what they how they're described. There's a lot of photos in it. I just put this slide in to say that we did pilot it, and we had very good feedback from our aged care workers. They found it very, very easy to use and are really keen to get the whole program. This is a little bit about, yes, now we're at the end, and it is, we have come to the end of the tunnel, sort of. It's that analogy that, is it the light or the train coming the other way? It is the light, but we haven't actually finished. As I said, once we get national units of competency, that work will then have to be undertaken so that we can ensure that those learners will be able to get recognition for this learning. My last little slide is just about summing up what this project was like for Barbara and I and some of the other people that helped us on this. It was like a whitewater rafting. Most of us have had an experience similar to this where you stand on the shore and you think, wow, that really looks like fun. I think I could do that. Yeah, let's do it. And you get talked into it, and you strap on the vest, and you get the paddle, and off you go, and then you hold your breath for 20 minutes and praying for dear life that you're actually going to survive and wondering, whoever talked me into this, why am I in this raft? Guess, then you get onto calm waters, get out of the raft, adrenaline kicks in, and you go, my God, that was so much fun, let's do it again. And we will be applying for funding again. It was great.
At this point, we could perhaps thank all three participants for presenting today.